You're listening to WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. And here comes The Healthy Planet with more great cutting-edge health and environmental information. Welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's always in front of you, right now. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effect your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce the topic and our guest for today's program, since he has an enormous amount of information to share in the allotted time. And it's about a topic that's really important to all of us, and that is inflammation. That word has become quite a buzzword in the past years, despite the fact that I bet most of our listeners only have kind of a sort of vague idea about the degree to which it plays a role in your lives. So we're going to focus in on the truth about inflammation and not only how it impacts the disease process in general, but also how it impacts the big one these days, which is COVID-19. In fact, our expert guest says that inflammation is the triggering mechanism of all diseases. His name is Dr. Sunil Pai. That's P-A-I, P-A-I, Pai. And he literally wrote the book on inflammation entitled An Inflammation Nation. He's also a radio show host, speaker, and integrative MD at the Sanjeevani Integrative Medicine Health and Lifestyle Center in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Welcome to the Healthy Planet, Dr. Pai.
Thank you for inviting me.
Dr. Pai, when I look at the bios of many of the medical or nutritional experts that we've interviewed over the years, they're generally trained in one, two, or three modalities. You, on the other hand, I couldn't come anywhere close to mentioning your whole bio, but I will say that you studied so many different areas, from being board certified in family medicine and holistic integrated medicine to being trained in Ayurveda, yoga, functional medicine, homotoxicology, physiological regulating medicine, herbal medicine, medical acupuncture, and neuroacupuncture through Stanford University School of Medicine. You're certified in plant-based nutrition from Cornell University and the T. Colin Campbell Foundation, and also certified by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine as an educational alliance partner for delivering evidence-based clinical plant-based nutrition programs. And of course, T. Colin Campbell and Dr. Neil Barnard have been on this program. So I could go on and on with more about your training, but suffice it to say that you're viewing and addressing health and disease with a very broad perspective, which from my perspective makes your perspective very valuable. So let's start by having you describe what you practice, which is integrative medicine.
So integrative medicine is a specialty now in conventional medicine. So most physicians who are trained in integrative medicine, they will have done a residency like family medicine, internal medicine, or specialty. And then they do a fellowship training, just like they would normally, like a normal specialty like cardiology, neurology, for example, or GI. And they do a fellowship training. I was one of the first class of physicians over 22 years ago at the University of Arizona with Dr. Andrew Weil when we were pioneering this concept of integrative medicine. And at that time, it was you know, that word was just really quite new. But what truly integrative medicine is what the definition is integrating pretty much all medicines. What we're looking at is starting off with safe, natural, and effective dietary and lifestyle changes first, and looking at reducing the risk of side effects and starting off with, you know, again, things that are least costly, least invasive in our approach to attaining optimum health. So when we look at, you know, conventional medicine is excellent for what we consider acute care, right? Like ER medicine. But when we look at, chronic disease care, again, as I'll probably talk about a little bit later, we're not doing so well as a country. And so when we look at integrative medicine basically incorporates lifestyle medicine, which is like plant-based diet and sleep and exercise, et cetera. A functional medicine, looking at like your microbiome and nutrition and other aspects of functional aspects of how the body works. It looks at anti-aging. It looks at naturopathy, homeopathy. So all these other fields, which people have a separate therapist for, we're kind of the broader umbrella because it's kind of the best of all worlds, right? Where it's never saying that, you know, if there was only one medicine, then we would be not having this conversation and everything would be solved. What we're looking at is taking the best of everything. So it's kind of having the buffet of as many options and not being stuck in one box. And more importantly, not being blinded by ego of the profession or each of those boxes and only limiting our patient for their success or outcome of delivery by having those limited choices. So if I can give a patient multiple options of how we can kind of tweak what we call their epigenetics, their diet, lifestyle, and environment belief system of how their body can help prevent and actually reverse their diseases, what we look at, then that's what the best of integrative medicine is. It's looking at, you know, most people come in, say, for example, with multiple medications, and what our goal is looking at, can we now find the triggers of those dysfunctions? And more importantly, can we start reversing the use of those medications, which sometimes natural therapies as a glue to eventually being food as medicine and a lifestyle change that is needed.
That's perfect. They say, if you go to a surgeon to ask them what to do for your problems, they'll recommend surgery and on. So having that broad perspective is valuable, as I mentioned.
Yes.
So you're an MD who's also a strong proponent of evidence-based medicine. Now, to some, that means just the Western medicine that's practiced in the Western world. I want you to explain what evidence-based medicine is, why that's central to your practice, and how that fits with integrative medicine that includes everything from Ayurveda to Chinese medicine to naturopathy and a lot more.
So when we look at evidence-based medicine, you know, conventionally, from a Western standpoint, we're always looking at, you know, the gold standard, which is a double-blinded randomized control study, right? And some things we know we can do that. And now what we like to look at in our practice and what my specialty is looking at in natural and herbal medicines is how do we take those ingredients that have been used for thousands of years very successfully, say in Chinese medicine or in my area of specialty, Ayurvedic medicine, and then, you know, can we apply those same principles? Can we actually show in a clinical study why these things have been used? Now, there's an important thing of when we look at integrative medicine, there's kind of this balance wheel we call evidence-based. And sometimes some things will have double-blinded randomized control studies. And sometimes we also have no data showing any kind of harm. And so we have to balance that out because with conventional drugs, we have drugs all the time that are on the market that millions of people take every day that have double-blinded, you know, randomized control studies, the gold standard. However, it also has black box warnings, which you can have a heart attack, a GI bleed, or a stroke, or even cancer from taking the drug, right? So we have to have this balance of where, say, some things like homeopathy may not have as well-controlled studies, but there's also no recorded deaths of someone taking a homeopathic remedy. Right? Where we have other drugs, we have even over-the-counter medications where people can have a life-threatening illness side effect from that every day. And yet, even though the data might be good, that it can still be used. So there's always this balance. Now, what we look at in our practice that when we especially use natural therapies, like using dietary supplements or herbal medicines, we have to follow that evidence and say, like, is that the right potency, the purity, and the safety and efficacy for the patient as we do with our medications? Because food is medicine, and we then end up extending that to plant medicines. And so that's our specialty is how do we deliver something that has been shown in a clinical study to our patients? And a lot of people right now, they'll go to a health store, they'll go to the online, they'll go to some kind of a natural practitioner. The problem is there's a disconnect between what the patient is thinking and the provider is actually maybe thinking and what they actually get delivered, especially in the dietary supplement market. And so our goal and what we do is we actually follow the studies and say, okay, what was that ingredient? Who was actually manufacturing at that? You know, is it patented so that we can make sure that's replicated and duplicated? And number one, then are we giving it at the same dose that it was in the study to get the same effect? So just as we do with drugs, we do it with the natural therapies. And so some things actually we do right now, like what we offer all the time, we actually have wonderful studies. We actually have a lot, and there's a lot more data now than people actually think. So I can look up an ingredient. So if anybody, say, for example, comes to see me, say for a cancer, for example, we're helping them through their cancer. They're getting chemo, radiation, and these other things. How do we still help support those mechanisms? Anything that we offer them has to have in vitro and in vivo data, meaning in a cell culture, in an animal, and best yet the gold standard in a patient study of having the benefits for that use. So it's not just, you know, a lot of times people take random stuff. As you can see, there's a whole health store, there's aisles and aisles of pills, but we want to be very specific for each person's disease, just as we are with pharmaceutical drugs, giving this drug for a specific condition. But the benefits when we start using plant medicines is what we've coined the term is that you get side benefits, not necessarily side effects. Because just like with foods, there's a variety of other aspects that it has healing properties. And that's one thing that we always want to get our patients to have is participating in their healing process rather than just disease management.
You know, just today I saw a news release by the CDC stating that just 10% of Americans meet vegetable intake requirements. And we've seen these numbers before. Before going into inflammation that we're going to be speaking about for the rest of the radio show, I'm going to ask you to set the stage by outlining how you see the state of health in the United States, as well as how you see the efficacy of Western medicine in dealing with disease in this country.
Well, right now we're on the track, running off the track, as I say, we're going off track. There's actually an epidemic, as you know, with not only just say COVID, for example, but an epidemic of chronic diseases like simply as having obesity. You know, right now we spent about a little bit over $4 trillion, I think it was $4.1 trillion last year in healthcare. 18% of our GDP is on prescription drugs, which is about $370 billion. We're ranking about 16 in the top democracies from death from all causes. So right now we die in the United States more from infant mortality, homicides, teen pregnancy, HIV, AIDS, obesity, diabetes, heart disease, you know, lung disease and disability, more than 16 other countries, right? We rank 34 out of 35 industrial nations now in terms of life expectancy. And actually it's going to drop because of our COVID numbers. And the biggest numbers that we're ranking 46 out of 48 countries in terms of overall chronic disease health outcomes, A through Z. So we're 46 in the world right now in terms of outcomes. So when people ask, well, who's 43, 44, and 45? It's, well, Dominican Republic, Turkey, and Iran. So when we think of these things, these places politically, we have to say, well, but even however you think of them politically or economically, they're still doing better on all these other parameters from diabetes and heart disease and all. And then none of these countries has spent nearly as much as we have. And in fact, you know, we can put the top 15 countries combined healthcare expenditures, and they're still not the $4.1 trillion. So we spend a lot, but we haven't gotten what we thought we were spending. And so the goal is that, you know, Western medicine is really good at acute care. So you have COVID, we need to go to the hospital, you get a car accident, you have a heart attack, you unfortunately get a gunshot wound, you know, you want to go to the emergency room that's near you. But outside that emergency room, you know, we are failing in terms of, you know, we're not reversing chronic disease or preventing chronic disease. All we're doing is disease management. And that's where integrative medicine, and that's where we do very well with our practice, is looking at reversing those diseases.
I think that would surprise a lot of people to hear the numbers that you just mentioned.
Yeah. And I'll give you an example to go further. Like when we think of comorbidities right now, particularly with COVID in the last, you know, 2 years, almost with this pandemic, hypertension, heart disease, diabetes, lung disease, kidney disease, obesity, for example, is 70% of the population over the age of 20, and 9% has morbid obesity, which is a BMI over 40. So these are all the chronic contributing factors of why we're not doing so well with this virus, right? The virus is bad. It does have variants. Some of them are good. Some of them are worse than others, right? And there's always going to be this mortality rate, which is unfortunately today, 839,000 people, I think, saw this morning, have passed away from this unfortunate disease. However, why are we dying more than any other country when we spend $4.1 trillion? And aside of the politics of people not masking and not vaccinating, which is a problem in this country, is also that it shows that we're not as healthy as we think we are.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk more about that.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of the ugly truth and the ugly reality that none of us want to say, because we want to say we're number one, right? That's our inherent thing as Americans. We're always number one, number two, number three, at least, and everything. But we don't want to say that we spent the most money and with the bottom of healthcare, and that we're dying is because we have more comorbidities. We have more diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, lung disease, obesity than all these other countries. And so aside of the politics, aside of the non-vaccinated, is that even though, you know, we're even getting breakthrough infections and even people having complications with that, even when they're, you know, vaccinated and boosted, because we're still not healthy. We still have to look at a global, I think, and particularly in the United States, a policy of understanding that we need to get healthier overall as a population in order for these wonderful therapies that are offered for us to even work to the best advantage that we want.
Absolutely. And that brings us to the topic of the day, which is, as I mentioned in the intro, you were the author of the book called An Inflammation Nation. And you teach that chronic inflammation is the underlying condition that leads to over 200 chronic diseases, from heart disease to Alzheimer's and many, many more. Take some time, because this is the main topic, to explain how that inflammation and the disease process works so that people get an understanding of what's going on in their body with this inflammation that they hear so much about.
Okay, so I first want to mention that, you know, inflammation is a set of complex mechanisms, okay, that are biological, physiological, immunological, and anatomical, that these are signals that are kind of controlling a variety of aspects of your body. Now, simply, a lot of people think of just inflammation as pain, because that's how we remember, like redness and swelling and inflammation. But inflammation controls a lot of things. And we have two types of inflammation. We have acute inflammation, and then we have chronic inflammation. Acute inflammation is usually good because it's going to tell us something is wrong. You sprain your ankle, it's going to get swollen. But why that joint is swollen is because the body's saying, hey, I don't want you walking on this. I need to heal from this injury. So there's, you know, acute inflammation is fever, for example. We want people actually initially in an early part of the infection to have a fever. The fever is actually the immune system upregulating itself to help fight the infection. So that's why we kind of avoid like fever reducing medications in the beginning, because we want the body to fight it. However, it's the problem when the acute inflammation becomes chronic. Okay. So inflammation is derived from the word fire, phlegm, or itis. I-T-I-S in quotes, I always like to say. And so anything that we put behind that word itis just means inflammation of that area. So again, dermatitis is inflammation of our skin. We can get conjunctivitis of our eyes, runny nose, rhinitis, sinusitis, gingivitis, thyroiditis, bronchitis, esophagitis, gastritis, colitis, prostatitis, vaginitis, arthritis. So as you said, there's 200 different itises now, but what we have to look at is what are the underlying triggering mechanisms in each person that is contributing to that inflammatory response. What Western medicine has done is, like, through all those itises, well, if you have, you know, red eyes, here's eye drops, and here's nasal spray, and then here's a thyroid medication, and here's an inhaler for your lungs, and an upper pill for your stomach, and a lower pill for your stomach, and a topical for your skin, and here's something for your joints. They're all treating inflammation symptomatically, but what no one's really looking at is what are those underlying triggering mechanisms that make the body burn? What causes that fire inside the body, which then ends up contributing to degeneration of that area, and eventually, sometimes in certain cases, can actually increase the risk of other conditions like cancer.
Yeah, so you're talking about the big picture about what is creating a context in our whole body that's going to allow for all these diseases to manifest.
Correct.
And you state that the largest contributing factor to all inflammation in our bodies is not what some people think, which is genetics, but diet.
Yes.
So explain that diet inflammation connection, how it works, and then also go into the diet that you recommend.
Sure. So when we look at chronic diseases, and even cancer, for example, the data shows, and this is all outlined in my book with all the clinical studies and all, is that genetics plays about a 2-3% role. It's very small, unlike what we think about every day. We read about genetics, people are doing genetic testing and all. But really, when we look at chronic disease and cancer incidence, the largest contributing factor is diet. Second largest is tobacco use. Third is obesity. Fourth is infections, which relates to immune system. The fifth is environmental pollution toxicities. And so the very lowest, smallest thing, which is 2-3% now, is genetics. Now, what we see is what we call epigenetics, right? Epigenetics is a diet, lifestyle, environment, and belief system that is passed down from our parents who passed it down from their grandparents of the lifestyle. So it's not that a heart disease gene is being passed through all of us. It's actually more of the diet that your grandparents ate is pretty much what your parents ate is pretty much what you eat. And now, since we have the standardization of the standard American diet, or the SAD diet, as we call it, that's now pretty much been sold everywhere, then almost every country that has adopted our lifestyle of our standard American diet has our life diseases. You know, your lifestyle is determining of your death style, as we call it. I think there's a song actually that Metallica had on that. So there's it's very interesting thing. It's like, this is related to how it is. And so it's not that we're passing down specific genes. It's that we're actually looking at what are the epigenetics, the diet, lifestyle, environment, belief system. And what we need to focus on is the 97% of the things that we can control. So there's always going to be this small little sprinkle of genetics and everything. But a lot of people say, well, hey, diabetes runs in my family, so I'm just going to go have a donut and, have some ice cream, or, this runs in my family, heart disease, so I'm just going to have a double cheeseburger. But that's not true. You know, you can change your epigenetics, because that is how you're doing it in real time. And that's something that in the last, 5, 6, 10 years, epigenetics is becoming the forefront of how we get ahead of our diseases, because we're all been dealt the cards. It's really how you play the game.
And the diet you'd recommend?
So diet we recommend is an anti-inflammatory diet. So what's an anti-inflammatory diet? Anti-inflammatory diet is eating a whole food plant-based diet.
So that's, once again, a whole foods plant-based diet.
Okay, now why is that? Because animal protein is pro-inflammatory. Animal protein and saturated fats are pro-inflammatory. So you want to be lowering that. So when we think of inflammation, you want to be eating the most anti-inflammatory diet. Now, other things that are contributing in an animal protein diet is, beef, chicken, pork, eggs, dairy, fish, is they all have cholesterol. It's still the number one cause of death. Number two is COVID right now. Number three is cancer. But the number one cause still in America and worldwide is heart disease. Three people every minute have a heart attack in the United States. So when we can reverse heart disease, and that's been proven many, many times, we do that all the time in our clinic, just by moving people to a plant-based diet. Plants have antioxidants and phytonutrients, okay? Phytonutrients are all these wonderful things that when you go to the health store, every pill that you see is a phytonutrient, antioxidants, lutein, lycopene, xanthine, curcumin, EGCGs, resveratrols, they only come from plants, phyto meaning plant nutrient. And so when we look at animal proteins have no phytonutrients. And there's very, very little to no antioxidants, particularly since 99% of all animal protein food is factory farmed in the United States. Importantly, also, we're looking at, plant foods is the only foods that have fiber. And you need to have fiber, because fiber is what actually is balancing and correcting the dysfunctions of your microbiome, which is your GI tract. So how do you absorb? How do you assimilate? How do you excrete? These are all the things, that prevents dysbiosis. Now, the studies will show that animal protein increases dysbiosis, which means like SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, gut overgrowths, candidas, parasites, but also creates a dysbiosis by endotoxins. And endotoxins are things that trigger more inflammation, even if you cook it, boil it, or even your stomach acid, no matter, even if it's organic or free range or grass fed. So other things that we look at is that animal proteins will increase insulin growth factor. They have other pro-carcinogenic factors like TMAO, heterocyclic amines, NEU5GC, and alpha-synuclein. But more importantly, as we see, is that the more animal proteins that we eat, which are pro-inflammatory, is that it actually increases what we call insulin resistance and intramyocellular lipid deposition, which means this blood sugar problem and obesity problem and all these things, and the bioaccumulation of toxins as well that's in the foods. So eating an anti-inflammatory diet means that if you're eating plant foods, meaning plants, vegetables, grains, legumes, fruits, seeds and nuts, all those foods are anti-inflammatory, high in fiber, high in phytonutrients, high in antioxidants, increase your microbiome diversity. They don't have any pro-carcinogenic promoters. They actually decrease insulin resistance and blood sugar problems, and they actually reverse cardiovascular disease. So we like to move towards that. Now, what I do specifically in our practice is that we like to look at all foods equally. So even though we're recommending a plant-based diet, we also like to look at, does each person's individual immune system have a sensitivity to any food, like a food sensitivity or food allergy that is triggering inflammation? Because that's my specialty, is inflammation. So we like to look at, is there certain foods that trigger a response within an hour, or certain foods that can trigger foods, which we call a delayed, up to a few hours, up to 4 days later after consuming it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who try to, move to a plant-based diet, they may go, I tried to go to plant-based, but then my stomach was bothering me, or this was bothering me, or I got worse headaches or something. And then when we do the testing, we end up finding out, hey, you know what? You might have a sensitivity to something on this side of the aisle. You might have a problem with a kale or a blueberry or avocado or tomato. And now that you're eating more of it, it's triggering an inflammatory response due to a immune sensitivity, like a food sensitivity specifically to that individual. So we like to move people to a plant-based diet, which is anti-inflammatory. And then we like to individualize. That's what we're really good here at in integrative medicine. It's not, again, one size fits all. It's like, now then, how can we fine tune that person's diet so they're on the complete anti-inflammatory diet as possible that's best for them?
That makes a lot of sense, because you do hear about these breakthrough cases. I call them breakthrough cases because there are people who've moved to a really healthful diet, and yet they still complain about having certain issues.
Yeah, I mean, I just last week had a person who came in and before the consultation, and so she was trying to go plant based because she read the book, and you know, she's watched all the videos I have on, you know, on our website and all these interviews, and you know, she was doing some smoothies and having some salad, and her joints got really bad and her gut got really bad, and then when she came back positive, you know, we did her studies, she actually had a problem with kale, believe it or not, even though people call it a superfood, right?
Yeah,
and you know, she had a high immediate and a delayed, and it's like, you know, so she's putting kale smoothies and kale salad and, you know, supplements that are greens, and it's actually triggering an inflammatory response. So once we figure that out, it's like, don't eat that, but have chard and spinach and all the other greens and all, and literally within 2 days all her symptoms changed, right? So then she can continue on eating healthy. Just now we're trying to fine-tune. Same thing with animal proteins. You know, some of my patients may not go completely plant-based, but we still want to look at what's still the lesser of the evil. So if they're eating something, we all, you remember, I'm not a perfectionist, I'm a realist. So realistically, there's going to be holidays and grandmas and anniversaries and church functions and, you know, potluck dinners, or you're stuck in Dallas in the airport at 3 a.m, you know? So I eat completely differently. I don't eat animal protein, but there will be people who have choices and difficult choices. I still always want them to make the better choice. And so it's always the lesser of the evil so that they're not doubling down and getting more inflammation from something that they shouldn't be eating anyways.
Makes a lot of sense. This is Bob DiBenedetto with the Healthy Planet radio program on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We're speaking to Dr. Sunil Pai, that's P-A-I, author of An Inflammation Nation and Integrative MD at the Sanjeevani Integrative Medicine Health and Lifestyle Center. And we're discussing what Dr. Pai calls the triggering mechanism of all diseases, that is, inflammation. So in addition to everything else that you've mentioned so far, it looks like our food choices are strongly correlated to the degree to which not only we suffer from heart disease and stroke, cancer, diabetes, and all that, but from the worst outcomes of COVID-19. And we talked to Dr. Neil Barnard about a couple of studies that were done last year that were talking about that people who are on a plant-based diet had anywhere from a 40 to 73% reduction in the most severe outcomes from COVID-19. And on the other hand, those on a keto diet were shown to do substantially worse, showing a 48% increased risk of severe COVID-19. So talk about that connection between inflammation, COVID-19, and diet.
So when we look at people eating the standard American diet or even ketogenic diet, which is actually worse in the data than standard American diet, if you can believe that, is that, remember, they're eating a pro-inflammatory diet. So COVID-19... and any of the variants, all it is doing is triggering this, what they call this cascade of inflammatory effects, the cytokine storm, as they kind of like to use that term a lot. And that inflammatory effects cause damage to the brain. Now we understand that even people with long hauler syndrome, which is now 30% of people who get asymptomatic, meaning they just got it, they didn't get sick, they didn't have to go to the hospital, they're now still coming out with long-term symptoms anywhere from 1 month to 12 months so far of having cognition problems. Right. I mean, now that studies are showing kidney scarring is occurring in healthy patients. We're looking at neuropathies and cardiomyopathies. These are all dysfunctions. But when we look at the average person, when we have this kind of overall inflammatory diet, the inflammatory diet that's pro-inflammatory, ketogenic, and standard American diet, it leads to hypercoagulability, meaning the blood becomes thicker a lot easier, right? Endothelial dysfunction, meaning the vasculature, meaning the heart disease issue there, right? Kidney function, the average person has chronic kidney disease due to eating high pro-inflammatory foods. Heart disease, as I mentioned, lung conditions, and then again, obesity, which obesity then becomes a vicious cycle because it's all of these combined. So the average person that has more obesity problems has a tendency to have more heart disease, kidney function, you know, heart function, lung dysfunctions, and coagulability. So if you take the virus, it's like the domino. It just knocks down all of these things. And so we have to be making sure that, you know, when we're looking at putting people on an anti-inflammatory diet, that data is fantastic. You know, in our practice, one of the largest plant-based practices here in the United States now, you know, our patients, as well as they're healthy as they are, is that they still will get exposed, right? Like, so even though we did well, we, you know, we mask up and we social distance, you're still going to travel. There's still people coming in the grocery store or something. And people, and now, especially with the new variant, have been getting sick a little bit more. Our numbers in the United States are going up. What's very interesting is the people in our patients practice, those people who are more plant-based, just follows that data. It's like, oh, I got it. I didn't really know much of it. Those people who are kind of like, well, I kind of sort of eat a little bit better, they didn't do as well because they're adding inflammation. Remember, it's fuel to a fire. And so the idea is the less fire that you have, the less fire that will burn completely systemically. The more fires that you have, then the body's immune system is very, very depressed and suppressed. And so it causes this havoc. And that's the difference between someone coming in with exposure and saying, oh, I just got to lay home for a little bit and lay low. And some people who have to go, you know, to the emergency room and eventually end up possibly in the ICU. So the goal is actually being on an anti-inflammatory diet. And the data was beautiful of that study that was coming out on plant-based diets. And more importantly, what we like to look at evidence-based wise, in addition to vaccines, because we want everybody to get vaccines and boosters, there'll be new things coming out, you know, in the future, because we're going to have to keep doing this if the variant spin. But we like to look at plant medicines and saying, is there studies on certain plant medicines that are also assisting and helping? And there is. And so we have tons of, you know, randomized control studies, like here's the type of right form of curcumin. This is the right type of piperine. These are what the studies done in a hospital, peer-reviewed studies. The idea is that, you know, right now we want to obviously give the vaccines first. But right now, our goal is always when people are vaccinated, I still want to help lower your risk of breakthrough infections. And so we have tons of protocols now that these are things that are published evidence-based now. The problem is there's a lot of misinformation on the internet. So understandably, there's like, you know, people are taking drugs that they shouldn't. People are taking, you know, every day you hear something new that's pretty ridiculous. And so it's hard because there's so much noise, but yet there is wonderful data saying, hey, these are simple things like vitamin D levels of people. I mean, there's now four or five big conclusive studies showing that if people's vitamin D levels, they should be tested by their physician. If it's in the optimum range and two people with the same comorbidities come into the hospital, the people that have higher levels do better. So these are simple things and cheap things, you know, when we give like our Bosmeric product, which is our anti-inflammatory, which has those ingredients that I mentioned before that, you know, have been double-blinded randomized controlled studies recently, lowering just all inflammation in general, even it can help prevent, even when you get exposure, the sequelae problem, right? Like, because we, unfortunately, we're in a place where this is going to be something that we have to get used to living with, you know, now they're calling it endemic rather than pandemic. But the goal is in how do we work as a culture is by lowering all our comorbidities. You know, the main thing is, you know, in my book, for example, in Inflammation Nation, I talk about the 10 definitive steps. These are 10 steps that you should do. And if you do these 10 steps, you don't have to be perfect at all of them, but just go through each 10 and go back to one and do a little bit more. You will start learning that you can reverse your diseases and improve your overall health. That just improves your overall risk of if you were to get COVID or if you were to get any other kind of condition or even get in an accident, for example, you do better. Our goal is like getting healthy is kind of like your insurance policy. So same thing with COVID. You can still get sick, but, you know, eating more plant-based, being more anti-inflammatory and getting less comorbidities is like you getting a car and then having a seatbelt and then adding front airbags and side airbags. And now, you know, assisted driving and, you know, warning lights and all. The more that you add that insurance, which is your diet being healthier and healthier and lowering your comorbidities, then, you know, you still can get hit by a drunk driver. You can still slide on, you know, black ice in the snow right now, but you're more likely to walk away from that accident if you're healthier. So everything is all related to health. And we have to look at in our practice is we look at what are the triggers of inflammation. We look at patients' microbiome. We look at their nutrition. We look at their drugs and medications. We look at things, how can we increase your immune system functioning? So how do we get your immune system stronger? How do we strengthen the immune system rather than just suppress the immune system, unfortunately, which we give a lot of drugs? And by doing those simple things and working on, you know, stress reduction and other lifestyle changes, you know, we have wonderful, wonderful results with our patients.
Makes sense. So we've discussed on previous shows how a serious missed opportunity that we've been seeing recently over the last couple of years has been the lack of public education that's been done on the preventability of the pre-existing conditions that make it worse for all of us that you've touched upon. If you were king of the world, or let's just say in charge of the health of the world, you've mentioned a little bit about this, but I'm going to ask you a little bit more. And you were able to create a COVID-19 prevention treatment policy for the world. What would it look like?
I think it'd be very simple. It looked like the 10 steps in my book, really. And the reason is because it's epigenetics, right? Like, it's never like a... Unfortunately, our culture, Western culture, wants the magic bullet.
Yeah.
You know, they want them. I want to do one thing and nothing else, right? Like, you know, is there one exercise I can do? I don't have to do any more exercise. Or is there one prescription drug and I don't have to do anything? Or is there one herb or supplement I can take? And what people have to understand is that if you really want to achieve optimum health, life, it's a lifestyle. So when we say Sangevity Integrative Medicine Health and Lifestyle Center, it's funny, when I had that 22 years ago, people used to make fun. Why do you have health in the name of your title? Why do you have integrative medicine in the name of the title? Why do you have lifestyle? Now there's lifestyle medicine doctors. There's this whole concept, because you have to understand it's your lifestyle, right? And by getting a healthier lifestyle, doesn't mean that you get there overnight, but you got to get there. And it's the epigenetics. So what I would be teaching if I was the, you know, the health policy, or I was, or if I was at the CDC, is aside of looking at, you know, people getting vaccinated, which is important, and, you know, boosters, which is important, and social distancing and masking, all these things are important, but we have to look at, we have to keep reminding the patients themselves that they have to do their job. Their job is to get healthier. We can't spend $4.1 trillion and be 46 out of chronic diseases countries in the world. There's a disconnect. There's a huge epic failure. And we just also can't expect to just say, well, let me go to the hospital and let them treat us and not fear a side effect, or not expect a side effect. You know, errors occur. And, you know, when we're looking at acute medicine, the more acute it is, the higher the risk there is as well. Right. And even chronic disease, people take drugs all the time, and I have people coming all the time. Oh, I'm taking a statin. I'm taking something for my depression. I'm taking something for my diabetes. How long have you been taking this? Oh, 35, 40 years. I'm like, well, why isn't it reversed? They're like, what do you mean? You know, I'm like, well, these are all lifestyle diseases. Let's start looking at how we can reverse it, not manage your disease. But unfortunately, our whole system, the medical system, the conventional medical system, unfortunately, and how the insurance companies and hospitals have been based, is disease management. Unfortunately, they make money on your disease, right? So heart hospitals make money doing heart procedures, not reversing heart disease or preventing you from going in. And there's wonderful physicians who've done the studies and showed that, you know, for decades now, reversing the number one killer. I mean, that, you know, we don't have a war on heart disease, but there should be. It's still the number one killer. Three people.
It would be a successful war, right?
Right. And so it's interesting. We're kind of bringing COVID, which is important as a topic. And yes. But hopefully, you know, what's kind of been silenced is this other discussion of like, hey, what about the comorbidities that the average person has? And when we look at other countries that we would consider very poor nations, like in Asia and Indonesia and Africa, say India, for example, we don't see these comorbidities as much. And even though they don't have good sanitation, they're actually more crowded than we are. They don't have social distancing. Their numbers are not as high, right? And so it's like, well, what does that mean? That means that we're not doing as well as we think, again. And so our goal is, you know, we have to do our part. Our goal is to take every person and help them achieve their optimum health.
Makes a whole lot of sense. And, you know, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. Many people promote, when they think about not eating animal products, the next thing they fall back upon is they're going to eat wild caught fish, grass-fed beef, organic beef, free-range beef. And they say it's different from factory farmed animals, claiming that they're actually eating something that's health promoting. You say that's a big mistake. Explain that.
Yes. And in my book, which is interesting, for those people who do eat that way, each food category, chicken, beef, fish, pork, we go into the detail. Right? Because we're actually not getting what we're sold. There's a, you know, the food industry is notorious at misinformation, right? Or misleading slightly, you know, they kind of bend the truth. So like when people say free range, well, I can have a big barn with, you know, thousands of chickens, open a little 4-inch door and call it free range, as long as that door is open, but none of them will ever leave, right? So you know, grass fed, for example, means right now, well, we can feed it in a feedlot, and then the last 3 months we feed it grass, and then we can classify it as grass fed, but it's not grass fed. It's actually, you know, people need to have grass fed finished, which means the whole time. The problem is, even when they do that, even with wild caught fish, for example, right, is that it's still pro-inflammatory, organic or not. It still has no fiber. It still has no phytonutrients, and it has very little to no antioxidants. So what we have to be careful of, and to be honest, before I went plant-based in 2006, I was the guy who was eating the cleanest food. You know, like if you came to my house and people, you know, we'd invite people, it'd be like going to a Michelin star restaurant. Each of my dishes had a story. The fish was flown in from this part of Alaska. And, you know, my eggs come from Taos, New Mexico, where they do yoga and sing kumbaya. And, you know, and my beef, you know, there was a massage therapist in, you know, Japan that would, I mean, I was that guy, because we were sold, and we thought, hey, if I spend an extra $1 or $2 per pound, that it was like the get out of jail card on the Monopoly game. It was like, hey, I'm paying more. I'm not going to the big box store or the fast food restaurant to get my food. I'm going to the health store or the butcher shop, you know, and all. But wait, remember, at the end of the day, it's still pro-inflammatory, still has cholesterol, still has no phytonutrients, still has no fiber, little no antioxidants. So what we end up doing is end up paying more per pound. And now that we have data looking at, you know, even organic of those foods, organic grass-fed and all the stuff versus conventional of those foods, and it doesn't show any statistical significance in terms of overall improving health outcomes because of what I just mentioned before. The thing is, yes, it does have less hormone. Yes, it does have less antibiotics, which is always good, but it still doesn't get rid of the heart disease, still doesn't get rid of the Alzheimer's, the cancer, the dysbiosis, the inflammation. So it is a misnomer. The industry still wants you to buy the food. And this industry will still try to sell this concept of, you know, clean food, but clean does not necessarily mean healthier.
Right. You've made the point, which is kind of funny, that there are no chicken pills, whether it's grass-fed or not, or meat pills or dairy pills. So how about fish oils and inflammation, even though those other pills are not being used?
Yeah. So the fish oil is a fatty acid. And the interesting thing, it's not the fish protein, which people are trying to eat from eating, say, salmon, for example. Mm-hmm. My book has a whole section on, you know, understanding why most wild-caught salmon is not actually wild-caught. So for those people who are like, I'm trying to eat a Mediterranean diet, you know, that's one step better than a standard American diet, for sure. It's not the full answer. For those people who want to reduce and reverse their heart disease risk, then it's important that you go completely plant-based. But the problem with the fish, eating the fish, and even with the oils, is that the toxicity is really high. You know, the most recent study shows that even with irritable bowel patients, for example, they've been found to have twice the amount of microplastics in their stool due to fish consumption. Right. Hmm. So it's everywhere. It's not just like I'm eating, you know, obviously, you know, wild caught fish is always better than farm raised fish. Obviously, my book will go into that. Now, there's a big discrepancy of what we mean and how we can classify something wild caught. For those people who want to dig further, read my book, because you'll be shocked. You'll be completely shocked. But we have to understand is that the toxicity is there. The toxicity is in the animal proteins, the toxicity is in the fish. Fish can contain PCBs, dioxins, heavy metals. And, you know, most fish oils are not clean to that level. They might do a testing once in a while. We used to actually have a company that we used to work with that was, you know, sustainable and the harvesting of the fish and all. And then we started looking at further and saying, you know what, but fish is no longer sustainable. Seafood is no longer sustainable for the planet. So what I ended up doing is I ended up consulting for a few years, and they actually came up with now what we have is a plant-based EPA and DHA, not just DHA. Now we can get EPA now also. So, you know, one of my claim to fame is like helping one of these larger companies do that, because we have to look at more sustainable sources. But from the dietary standpoint, just eating flax seeds, walnuts, chia seeds, hemp seeds are high in omega-3s, and they have fiber, and they have antioxidants, they have phytonutrients, and they have protein, where when we take the oils, all you're getting the oil. Right. So there is benefits, you know, in terms of there is plant oils, but I like people to do the foods first. Now, what we like to do is we test those things in our clinic so we can actually look at your omega-6, your omega-3s, your omega-9s, all your antioxidants, ACE, CoQ10, glutathione, all your B vitamins 1 through 12, not just your folic and B12 that your primary might do. Magnesium, zinc levels, toxins. We want to look at everything because everybody's different. You can be eating a healthy diet, but your microbiome and not my microbiome and the audience's microbiome is completely unique. And so how and what we're absorbing, assimilating, excreting is completely different. So we want to individualize. Do you need supplementation? And supplementation is only supplementing the diet, but never replacing the diet. So our goal is to always say, what can you eat more of? And the nice thing is on our test, we'll be able to say, hey, eat more of this food. It has all of these things. Don't just take a pill. And certain things that are going to be deficient or you have a specific need, then we can make sure that we're giving targeted, safe, and effective therapies for that.
Perfect. This is Bob DiBenedetto with The Healthy Planet radio program on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We're speaking to Dr. Sunil Pai, that's P-A-I, author of An Inflammation Nation and Integrative MD at the Sanjeevani Integrative Medicine Health and Lifestyle Center. And we're discussing the important topic of inflammation in your body, how to prevent it, how to reverse it. So let's move along to something that I learned about you recently. One thing that's different from you from a lot of the other plant-based doctors that we've interviewed is that they don't put much of an emphasis on supplementation. All of you agree that while our diet is the main tool we have in creating vibrant health, you also recommend that certain supplements be used as needed or on a regular basis, and that there's a benefit. And what I also just recently learned about you is that you have quite an extensive knowledge of food supplements, not just in getting a company to hey, you sell ginger. Yeah. Sorry, give me a ginger pill. I'll sell it to my patients. You actually know about the formulating of these, the manufacturing, the procurement of the best ingredients and the dosages and everything else that it takes to produce a product that you say actually works. Correct. And this isn't an infomercial, by the way. This is just because it's really interesting. You've created one product that's particularly interesting that targets inflammation called Bosmeric SR.
Correct.
Okay. Talk about the mistakes that many people make when they're purchasing supplements just by grabbing a pill off the shelf and contrast that with how you created this product, which you say might be helpful for those, even if they have a very healthy diet and lifestyle.
In my book and in most of my lectures, I'll show that, you know, there's been research that we're looking at compounds in the plant world, right? The phytonutrients and phytochemicals in fruits, vegetables, grain, legumes. And then when we look at Ayurvedic medicine and Chinese medicine and other kinds of medicine, they're actually looking at chemical structures and running studies all the time. And so what we ended up looking at is then what are the combinations of natural therapies that we can give? Now, the challenge is that when we use our Bosmeric, which I consider the strongest natural anti-inflammatory available, it's how we put it together. It is the doses of those patented ingredients, and it's the delivery system that makes it quite unique. The right form of curcumin, for example, right now, 43% of curcumin. Curcumin is the 2-5% of the main compounds in turmeric, right? Which is the rhizome, the yellow curry, we always think of turmeric all the time for food, which is very helpful. We should be eating at least a fourth to half a teaspoon a day, just in your diet if you can. But when we're looking at now trying to make it into a medicine, there are certain components that make it stronger. And the curcumin that we use actually has over 160 published studies that are independent. They're not company formed. They're not white papers. We're looking at, you know, hospitals, major universities and hospitals doing clinical research. Even like what I was just talking about recently, the same ingredient that's in ours was done as a double-blinded randomized control study right now with reduction of inflammation in patients in the hospital as an adjunct of therapy to conventional therapy when people got COVID, right? But they're using the right kind of product because right now 43% of curcumin on the market is synthetically made. Right. So that means that we can make something in a lab, we can make it in China and India, and it's synthetic. The problem is there's solvents with that, and there's also problems where it doesn't have the same biological activity. In fact, it actually can have side effects. We also add something called Boswellan PS. We're the first company to have this ingredient, which is frankincense. A lot of people know about boswellic acids and AKBBA, but we add a new polysol ingredient, which is a fraction of that of frankincense, which actually gives it a water soluble aspect, meaning it has a 20-minute onset of action. So you can take something and within 20 minutes notice the benefit. And where we want to look at is that when we talk to patients and even physicians who now are recommending this to their patients worldwide right now, is that we're so used to pharmaceutical medicines, you take something and it works really quickly. And, you know, when we take natural medicine, they have to say, oh, it's going to take weeks and weeks and weeks. Here, someone has back pain, headache, you know, menstrual cramps, you know, arthritis, like they want to have that relief. Well, we can provide a 20-minute onset of action. And then it's in a bilayered sustained release caplet where it lasts over 8 hours. We add also ginger. We also add the Bioprene to improve it. Each of these ingredients are anti-inflammatory in effect, but we also looked at the ratios of each of those components together, and then they ran studies, and we were looking at, you know, what was the appropriate ratios of each of these constituents individually and together, and then we maximize that benefit. So for people that have problems with arthritis, instead of taking a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, ibuprofen, Aleve, Motrin, Advil, naproxen, all NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, have a black box warning. And if the audience doesn't know what a black box warning, then they definitely need to read my book because they'll be shocked where, you know, you can have an ibuprofen or naproxen. You can just take one of those at one time and you can have a heart attack, a GI bleed, or a stroke. And so we want to look at what can we do that's natural and safe and effective. And the Bosmeric is something that is a great opportunity for them to take. For those people who have severe issues, they can take twice a day, or cancer patients take 2-3 times a day. But for people who are eating healthy plant-based diet, just taking even one a day just to lower inflammation generally, right? Because we get inflammation from, you know, working on our feet too long or exercising too much. I mean, there's this normal inflammation. Remember, there's a certain amount of good inflammation, certain amount of bad inflammation. But remember, it's not just suppressive. We're looking at with these ingredients, we're also talking about upregulation and helping gene expression for the positive aspects of healing and prevention, rather than just taking a pill that's only blocking one. We're like a sprinkler system of calming the fires down throughout the whole body rather than just using a fire hose.
Makes a lot of sense. Overall wellness as opposed to treating
overall
the
wellness.
Symptoms.
Yes. Right? Yes.
So you do work at the Sangevity Integrative Medicine Health and Lifestyle Center. I know the center is far from our listening audience, but talk about what you do there, what a common patient experience might be. And I'll also mention you do telehealth appointments there as well.
Absolutely.
Correct?
In fact, prior to the pandemic, that's the benefit of actually, that's why I'm so used to Zoom now. Because even prior to the pandemic, 3 years, we were using the, you know, telemedicine or doing health consultations. We see people all over. So 80% of my practice is outside of my state. But what they do is I provide health coaching. You know, we're a consulting integrative physician. So people have their primary, they have multiple specialists and even their alternative practitioners. Our goal is to come in with our expertise of looking at, let's evaluate your medications and its side effects and its pathways. Even our cancer patients, 60% of my patients are cancer patients. We have to look at when they're taking a medication, what natural therapies, you know, what, how does it work pharmacologically? How does it work through their liver? What are the pathways? So we're really specific. You know, a lot of people in the alternative world will say, take everything and don't take this. And oncology will say, for example, don't take any of those natural therapies. And you need someone to actually say, these are the things that you can take. These are the things you can't take. These are the things when to take it and when not to take it. If you get very specific with understanding both herbs and supplements and prescription medications, then the outcome is improved. And our whole goal is to improve outcome. We do myself. We also have an Ayurvedic doctor in my practice, Maureen Sutton. And so we are able to do Ayurvedic consultations as well. We do nutrition consultations. I do medical acupuncture, specific type called neuroacupuncture. There was a film called Return to Life. If people want to see a documentary on that, if you go to neuroacupunctureinstitute.org, it's a nonprofit where we teach providers and practitioners how to help with neurological conditions like stroke, MS, Parkinson's, and autism, and cerebral palsy, and TBI. So it's a great thing that people can do. We have a float tank. We have a yoga studio. We custom design it and formulate all our products that have our name on it. And other products that we use, if we use somebody else's product, then we know that it's been, you know, clinically tested and we have experience with using it. So we provide a variety of aspects, kind of a one-stop shop, a full-service integrative clinic, but it's focusing on the dietary and lifestyle changes first. So we don't do IV therapies. We're not into like gimmicky things. We're looking at what is the evidence that we can start using. And we meet people where they're at. So some people just like, first, let's test their food sensitivity, start with that, and then move towards a plant-based diet. First, start with what their limitations on movement therapies are and start with something very easy. Maybe just start with some breathing techniques. Maybe start with some things that can help them sleep better. But at the end of the day, all and major most diseases can be reversed to a certain degree. In fact, some of them can be completely reversed, like heart disease and diabetes and improving blood pressure and obesity and mood disorders. Some other things might be a little bit more, you know, degenerative. It takes a little bit more time, but we can always arrest a condition from getting worse rather than just keep masking the symptoms. And our goal is that I can help any of the audience that's listening, is that we provide consultations all the time. We provide the testing kits and all these other things. As a nonprofit, we don't upcharge on our labs. And so we're very, you know, a lot of people kind of go to doctors and like, oh my God, it costs so much. And this, like, we don't do any of that. That's between you and the lab company. We just kind of help people out. Our goal is to get people to move to the next level, because once you get to the optimum health, then you're always wondering why my physician wasn't telling me this ahead of time.
Yep. And that is www.sangevani, S-A-N-J-E-V-A-N-I.net, www.sangevani.net. And we only have about a minute and a half left. Is there anything else you'd like to leave our audience with before we bring this show to a close?
Yes, I want to make sure that everybody understands that your body has an innate ability to heal. And so when you say like, gosh, you have so much things that you've studied, because anybody who proclaims that they know everything and they're done doesn't understand healing. The body's more complex, healing is more complex. So that's why, you know, even after my fellowship for 22 years, I'm still learning, I'm still studying new things every day, because it's having that broader knowledge of bringing that information so that the patient has the most up-to-date options available. And for us, it's improving their outcome. It's not saying one is better than the other, is that we all as a society have to be giving our patients a better outcome of their condition. And so I just want people to let them know that we are available. My book's available on Inflammation Nation, and hopefully that'll be one step in the right direction of moving people to becoming healthier.
Perfect. I really appreciate your work and that you took the time to be with all of us today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. Thank you for listening.
All right. This is Bob DiBenedetto with the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We've been speaking to Dr. Sunil Pai, PAI, author of An Inflammation Nation. He's also a radio show host, speaker, and integrative MD at Sanjeevani Integrative Medicine, Health, and Lifestyle Center in Albuquerque. And you can find out more about him at www.sanjeevani.net. That's SanjeevaniNet. And you can find out more about his book, An Inflammation Nation, by going to aninflammationnation.com. That's aninflammationnation.com. And that's the definitive 10-step guide to preventing, reversing, and treating all diseases through diet, lifestyle, and the use of all natural anti-inflammatories. I'll be with you again next time on Friday, February 4th, and every month thereafter at 6 p.m. on the first two Fridays of each month. And when I'm not here, be sure to listen to Natural Alternatives and the Healthy Planet shows every week at this time, with great hosts sharing cutting-edge information on health, our environment, and much more. That's every week, Fridays at 6 p.m. For more info on Healthy Planet and our radio shows, or if you're interested in having me do a virtual presentation to your school or group, visit our website at www.healthyplanetusa.org or email us to join our mailing list at info@healthyplanetusa.org. That's info@healthyplanetusa.org. Also, like our Facebook page, which is at Healthy Planet USA. Until next time, stay strong, relax. Make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four or multi-legged friends. Cut back on that inflammation, both in our bodies and in our world. And finally, remember to enjoy each and every moment of our existence on this beautiful planet in this new year. Good night.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes to your driving habits can cut tailpipe emissions and improve fuel efficiency. Drive smart. Go easy on the brakes and gas pedal. Get regular tune-ups by following your vehicle's maintenance schedule. Check your tire pressure. Combine as many activities and errands into one trip as possible. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.
A stay in the hospital for people of all ages can be a stressful and challenging experience. But every day, teams of volunteers in UCLA's People Animal Connection, or PAC, make the lives of patients and their families better.
You see the patients get happier and more relaxed. They kind of forget that they're in a hospital bed.
The visits are provided to hospitalized patients without cost. Learn how you can get involved at uclahealth.org/PAC.